Welcome to BIC Magazine's Inside Industry Podcast, the program where business and industry connect to share topics and ideas that move the world's energy. BIC Magazine's Inside Industry Podcast is brought to you by the BIC Alliance. BIC Alliance and its sister companies, BIC Magazine, BIC Recruiting, and IVS Investment Banking, help industrial businesses grow through marketing and sales, hiring the right people, and merger and acquisition services. Visit BICalliance.com for more information.
Hello, friends and followers in industry and beyond. I'm joined by Stevie Toops, CEO of Turner Industries. Stevie, how you been?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How are you, pal?
Man, I couldn't be better. I got to three happy kids, a wife that's marvelous, and life is good, my friend. How's your family?
Everybody's great, healthy, very blessed. We're seeing the effects of post-COVID begin to wear off on this fantastic industry. I assume that's why we're talking today. So I think this ought to be fun.
Absolutely, man. So you and I, we're going to conduct this interview at the ECC conference in Marco Island, and a hurricane prevented me to getting access to the region. But hey, we're here, and we're just thank you for you making the time to be here. So let's get into it. So Stevie, I recently moderated a panel of procurement executives, including folks from INEOS, Cal Specialty Chemical, Fox Chemical. Both of those folks are building plants in LaPorte. And they all agree that quality of craft labor is a primary concern heading over the next few years. You know, give us some indication of what is Turner Industries doing? You know, you guys lead in so many areas. You know, what are you doing for workforce development, internship programs? Tell us some more about incumbent training. What are you guys doing to impact this market, given in so many locations Turner is nested?
You realize you shouldn't put a microphone in my mouth in front of me because it's going to be a long answer. Jeremy, this is a trick question because you know I love workforce development. Early in my career, I learned that it doesn't matter your role. It doesn't matter what you're doing anywhere in the company. Workforce development has got to be your prime directive. It's got to be what you think about. Take two companies, Jeremy. Take a 100-person company and a 100-person company on the same street, the building's the same size. What differentiates those two companies? The people. It's all that it changes. And if you don't think people are important, think about big industrial companies, GE, $123 billion of market cap, machines, jet engines, and Google, nothing but people. $1.64 trillion in market cap. People make the difference. So if you go there, that's why industry is so important. That's why workforce is so dynamic. So come back to answer your question. I've been passionate about workforce since the beginning. We've always tried to do something. What's interesting is what we do is something that raises the entire industry. In our industry, in the industrial sector, what Performance does, what Turner does, what Cajun does, all these companies, we're training a workforce kind of across the board. It's the craziest business, Jeremy, and you guys see this. BIC writes about it all the time. We all compete like mortal enemies, okay? And I love a great, solid competitor. That's what makes this business so cool. But when you talk about workforce, when you talk about making people better, when you talk about upskilling people, but you talk about the ability to take someone, teach them a craft, and drive them through upper middle class into successful careers, thriving, flourishing careers. Everybody does the same thing. Everybody pulls a wagon at the same level. So it's so much fun. What are we doing? I'll try and answer your question. Obviously, workforce is about training people. It's about doing stuff. But training is evolving so fast. You've got different generations. You've got four or five different generations in the field right now. Jerry, the goal right now, if you can imagine, our vision is, if you can think of it as a continuum, you ought to be able to enter and exit anywhere in that continuum or in that rainbow, if you will. Whether you're entering high school, going to a technical college, going to a two-year college, going to a four-year college, going to graduate school, going to law school, anywhere in that realm, you should have the ability to enter it, whether you're 18, 45, or 60 years old. There ought to be an opportunity for you to get in, better yourself, learn a skill, upskill, new skill, change skills, or whatever. When you talk about changing skills or upskilling, you think about what's happened in the field for us. construction is not, it's like the old saying, this is not your dad's construction company. This is a completely different world out there. To work on a crane today, you have to be able to establish a Wi-Fi connection. We're taking frontline leaders and pulling them out of trailers and putting everything they do during the day in a pad. I'm going to mess this number up, Jerry, but we got 100 job sites where the frontline leaders are on iPads or tablets, and they're job costing, the plans, everything they do, where scaffolding is, what budgeting, time entry, everything's at their hand. But what that does is it lets them get to the work site. They get to the work face, and they're working with their teams to keep everybody safe. They're the people with the experience. Put them out there. Here's another one. Historically, we have taken people, trained them for 4 hours at night to become something, and over the course of 6 months or a year or 2 years, they learn a new craft. They become craft professionals. We, in a small town in Texas, we began experimenting with something. The vision we had was to create an advanced manufacturing certificate. Could we just teach people to become really, really good in an advanced manufacturing situation? The vision was whether they're working for Turner or they're working for our competitors, they're working for somebody else, they're working in a different industry, but in manufacturing, could you teach that skill set? We built an advanced manufacturing program where we pulled pieces of carpentry, pieces of fabrication, pieces of welding, pieces of manufacturing, you really kind of lace together this training session where you show them what happens in a manufacturing arena. The output of that is a well-trained person who can get into a manufacturing arena and not get hurt. They know what to do. They understand how it works. They have a safety card. So we did a small cohort. I think it was about 12 people. Jeremy, they got out. They all got jobs. Just a couple with Turner, but the rest, everywhere else around the community. Now we're taking this successful model. We brought it to Houston. The first little cohort now has 70 people enrolled in it. That, to me, is a kind of exciting. When you can change lives like that. But if you think about it, it's a continuum. Whether they join at 18 years old or whether they join it at 42, it doesn't matter. And you take, if you really want to biggie size that, if you want to kind of really leverage that or become some sort of force multiplier, one of the things that ABC has done is signed an MOU or an agreement with the community college system that says you could take somebody coming out of high school, begin to offer them dual enrollment. They can enroll in the community college system. They can learn a craft. And when they get out, they've got 13 college credit hours. They've learned that craft. They have an ABC certificate. They have an NCCER certificate. Wow. And if they're Pell eligible, they got $1,000 in their pocket and they're ready to go to work. Jamie, that is amazing. And when you present that to the state of Texas, they say, hey, if Monty Sullivan will do it at the community college system in Louisiana, we'll do it too. Now, Jamie, you could take somebody who's working for Turner in Louisiana, who's going to go down and wants to better him or herself. And that same training they're learning in Louisiana, now they can learn in Texas. Wow. That's higher ed. So it's education. Yeah. Higher ed, for the first time, I believe, in maybe three generations, has the administration, the people, the leverage, the teachers, the community, the government, the business. Everybody's pulling in the same direction. So workforce is exciting. Those are some of the things that we're doing about it. The goal would be, in a perfect world, Jeremy, I would love to see create the environment where everybody can enter and exit anywhere they want. The funding can follow the people. We're close. Those are the kind of things that we're doing. What's next in workforce? Sandy, you can ask me before. What is Turner doing next? Here's one for you. Right now, we ask people to go get training at a technical college or go get training someplace else. What if you brought training to them? What if you did the training at the job site, where they got their certificate, they got their training, and hey, look, if they go to training, pay them at the next level up. I don't know what happened every place, but they're sitting in training, avoiding traffic, improving themselves, you're bumping skills up, you're solving a workforce crunch because now you're leveraging people, you're making them more productive, they're becoming better workers. And a lot of people will talk about a workforce problem or workforce challenge. Jeremy, how many times have you written an article about the workforce challenges? 2005, 2006, 2009, 2015, 2019.
You and I were talking about the silver tsunami of people exiting the industry, you know, 12, 15 years ago.
Yeah. The cool thing about this business is, while, and I think we get into this mindset, we solve problems for a living. That's what we all do. And so I think what happens is you get to be an old man like me, you start looking for problems. You begin seeking out problems. Workforce is a problem. Once you get a job, you quantify where it is. You have the mindset that I am going to make this the best work site possible. It's right. going to be safe. The parking's going to be great. The wages are going to be fair. People are going to train people. We're going to give them the opportunity to work the hours they want. Jeremy, the truth is you never really have problems staffing that job, do you?
That's right. Yep.
So I think the industry's heading the right direction.
When I hear that, Stevie, I think that there's so much buy-in that's required from everyone up the chain, right? You know what I'm saying? Like that's
absolutely
that's a culture, right? And so that's pretty fascinating to me. And then the other thing that stood out to me in what you said was, I think to attract younger people, the digitalization and automation side of this is they're growing up in this different world, you know. And so I think our industry is adapting, right? But how quick can we get there? Those types of advancements and investments that we have to make, that's the only way we're going to attract people under the age of like what, 35, right? And so that to me is important. Everybody has to buy into that. So
I think you're right. This industry does not reward technology for technology's sake. If you let the IT group go out and go, hey, we could try this, that's not rewarded well, in my opinion. Our IT leadership runs out into the field. They walk the field. They walk the sites. They talk to our people looking for a challenge that they can work on. Man, now, if you let technology solve a problem, flip the script a little bit, have technology be pulled to the challenge,
right?
Man, now you got something.
Yeah, versus mandated down, like
exactly.
Hand of God, right?
And you're so right. You've got a new environment of young people, and that's people younger than me, entering this business who are so digital native.
Yeah.
Working on a tablet is second. It's no big deal to them. Jeremy, I'll tell you something very interesting. It's scoop. You're the first person to hear it. I dread having you write about it, but we just pivoted 4,000 computer users to Google off of Microsoft.
Okay.
We believe that the Google suite is delivering a level of collaboration and efficiency and communication that we have never seen. It's amazing how people are communicating, how that Google suite allows us to do that. That's challenging. We're a Google shop living in a Microsoft world, and there's still plenty of Microsoft still floating around in here. But that Google suite gives you a level of collaboration. My vision, my hope, this team here at Turner, is that we're preparing now and grabbing data and grabbing digital information. And maybe we're a year or two ahead of where everybody else is. This is going to be very interesting. The data we can use in the coming years should alter the business.
Right.
Can I grab enough data? Can I grab enough information from JSAs, from weather reports, from experience logs, so that in the morning when that frontline leader puts all their information in, they can tell you, hey, there might be a hand injury in area 400 before 9 a.m. Can you get to that level? Now, we don't know for sure, but or can you begin to alert people to where the problem, where challenges, where pinch points are going to be?
So it's
that
like
drives you to zero, Jeremy. That drives
so gathering that data, not just implementing it, but actually the predictability of the database. That's pretty fascinating. And how, man, are we there? You know, that's
No, we're not. Interview me in 6 or 8 months. We'll tell you how close we are.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's really cool. We'll keep that in mind for the future. We'll see. Thanks for that update, man. And look, it's the biggest issue on the minds of folks that are actually trying to build sites, to maintain sites, to advance sites is labor and quality and craftsmanship. So I appreciate the update on that. So, Steve, I know you're limited on what you could say about current projects, but I did want to hit a couple that stood out to me. You've recently committed a project for OQ Chemicals, and you guys performed utilities excavations and civil work. Can you talk a little bit about that project?
I'll stay away from the specifics, but I'll tell you what I believe is really cool about this project. This was a unique situation. You had a very unique project. It was a project, Jerry, but it really felt like a turnaround. And the way it was orchestrated was this kind of really union of, you had a maintenance crew that was working with the on-site owners, people that the owner's team. You had the precision and the planning of a turnaround. And it was different. Usually what they would have done is say, hey, we're going to package it up. We're going to bid it out. We're going to bring the outside contractor in, and we're going to get the job done. What they did was they planned for it. They began watching it. They wanted to proactively manage out the risk and the safety issues they may have. And you really began planning a project like you would a turnaround. It was a unique view. And like I said, the precision and the planning of it was very, very, very unique. It was very successful. And on the back end, what is exactly not what everybody planned to have happen, happened. That's the way they did it. And it was a success story. We put a little article about it in our magazine. It was a very neat project. And again, I guess to answer your question officially, the answer is we took a nice medium-sized project, planned it like a turnaround. It worked out. We had fun doing it.
Fantastic. So, Stevie, Turner's has to respond to what clients are demanding, and that is sustainability, ESG-related investments, to put a broad bucket over it. I want to talk a little bit about Shell Convent, Louisiana. What is Turner's role in that renewable fuels conversion project?
So I'm going to answer this by saying, what is Turner's role in sustainability?
I mean, okay.
How do we help decarbonize a carbon-based business, right? That's a great question. I believe, this is Stevie's opinion, that the companies who will bring you the new forms of energy and thrive and get out through the energy transition just might be the same companies that have been bringing us energy for 200 years.
That's right.
You think about the companies that brought us from, I've used this example before, from whale blubber to fire to coal to wood to kerosene to gasoline. I think it's going to be the same companies. So if that's the case, what Turner does is just a few things, Jeremy. It's very simple. We dig holes. We put steel in the holes. Put concrete around it. We sling pipe into the steel. That's it. That's all we do, right? If that's the case, then the best we can do for sustainability is assist and support our customers as they begin to strive for their greenhouse gas emission goals, whatever they are. I think you've seen this transition from, oh my gosh, it's pie in the sky, it'll never happen, this is just a whole bunch of marketing fluff, to, hey, sustainability is something we can probably really get to. Now, the reality is it ain't gonna happen by Friday. Well, today's Friday. It's not gonna happen by next Friday. But yeah, when you begin to look at this, you can get there. People are now looking at technology. The coolest example I've heard, and I won't tell you the owner, one of our clients was talking to me a couple of days ago, a water bottle. When you recycle a water bottle, the technology now is you can recycle that water bottle probably about three times before the plastic is not something you can recycle anymore. Jimmy, they have technology now that will bring that water bottle back to the molecule. Yep. And now it can be infinitely recycled.
Yep.
You're not going to do away with plastic. I use this example all the time. You grab an EV, electric car, 50% of the volume of that car is 10% of the weight because of plastics.
Sure.
I serve on the board of our hospital here. And when you walk through an emergency room, just about everything in there is hydrocarbon based. Mm-hmm. You've got plastic tubes, everything that makes this society strong, everything. And then as you get out of the hospital room and you talk about energy and defense and everything that makes us a great nation, probably everything you and I are wearing right now has some sort of petrochemical base. So it's not going away. Our role, to answer your question, is we have got to make sure we can help our customers achieve their goals. There are unique things that we have to do, and we've got to be open-minded to it. We have a large fleet of 3,000 vehicles. Can that fleet be electrified? You've got a tremendous amount of people who commute the Gulf Coast, call it from Panama City to Corpus Christi, Texas. That run is not going to be made in an electric car today.
No.
But are there places it could be used? Yeah. Can I get my hands on them right now? No. So
yeah.
I think you've got to be open-minded about it. You've got to not be, but you've got to be realistic. You've got to understand that it won't happen by next Friday, but we're gonna see a world get a little bit more sustainable. And I think everybody across the board and everybody in this industry is excited to see it happen.
You look at global demand, Stevie, it's really going to take an all energy mentality, right? It's an energy expansion if you really look at it, right? And so you're right. As long as the world demands more and more energy, more and more power, it's gonna require it all. So,
everybody, when you flip a BIC open, a BIC magazine open, any page you turn to, those companies, those vendors, those suppliers are having to answer the same question: how do we support our customers to get it? So I think it's a great topic, and that we're all wrestling with it.
Yeah,
but the industry has pivoted now to a point where I think they're very, very realistic and very thoughtful about what really can be done. And it's exactly what you say. It's an energy expansion.
Sure.
Let's just see if we can't. We did this with safety in the 70s, right? Let's see how safe we can get. And here we are. It's it's 50 years later, and we're still driving to zero. We're trying to. But my gosh, the improvements in safety, the improvements in efficiency are so amazing. So, hey, where will we be in 50 years with energy? Who knows?
Yeah, that's right. So kind of dovetailing into that, Stevie, is leadership. And leadership is obviously a vital focus for Turner. You know, in the past year, Turner Industries has announced some other individuals into new leadership positions. You know, Stevie, how will those folks impact the organization in the future?
Leadership's a great question. It's my definition of leadership in my head is, years ago, someone read me a phrase, and I think Rudyard Kipling said it: true leadership is the ability to keep your cool while everyone else around you is losing theirs. And if you can bring people in that can do that, you and I already talked about the people are the lifeblood of a business. True leaders are the ones that people want to follow. Not that you've changed their rank and somebody else is forced to follow people. And so as a company evolves, it's natural that people change, people evolve, do different things. So one of the things that we're very, very blessed, we're very, very fortunate that we have leaders who have left the company, who have retired, who have stayed engaged, who have kept looking back, who have kept their hands, have kept to have that kind of leadership as we forge into different things and different strategies and different contracting strategies and different types of energy and whatever it may be. But to have that kind of leadership where someone can watch and say, hey, have you all thought about this? Have you thought about this? Have you thought about this? So I think the key is, look, we're excited about new leadership. You're right. We have four presidents here that run the operations groups of the company. We have a COO that they work for, a chief operating officer that they work for. And those people have been with the company 20, 25 years. They're new to the role, but not new to the company and not new to the industry. They understand, they get it, how it ticks. And something we've been doing is now they're bringing a lot of people in from the outside. There's tremendous opportunity in our company, and I'm assuming other companies too, as the industry begins to spread its wings a little bit. One of the things we've been seeing is, like, 2015 and 2019 were great years for us. 2020 was interesting. But what's coming, and what you guys write about every couple of weeks, is 24, 5, 7, 8 can eclipse what we've seen in the past. With the IRA come in the past, new energy, sustainability, transition, hydrogen. My gosh, the opportunities are boundless. What if, hey, you really want to think about it? This is where I drive my marketing people crazy, but are we going to be building modules that will be shipped to space to put on an asteroid to mine for lithium to get the batteries?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe not in my lifetime, but certainly want to be prepared for that. And so we're bringing leadership in. We're bringing new people in and leadership at all ranks throughout the company. New people are the lifeblood, new ideas, diversity of ideas, people who think differently. The other thing I tell this team is, if you're an 8, I'm a solid 8, Jeremy, right? Mm-hmm. I hire 9s and 10s around me. And I think that's the goal. You want to hire people who push you, who try to make you better. And that's what we've been doing. So if you meet somebody who's new with Turner, you can sleep good knowing they're a solid 9 or a 10.
Fantastic. I like that, Stevie. So let's get into safety. It's a license to operate in our marketplace. Stevie, you know, what's the secret sauce, man? It seems like every week or two I see some press release, or we publish a press release about a milestone hit at various sites where Turner's been operating for some time. What's that secret sauce to maintaining a safety record that matters?
We've been talking about it. It's the people. Once people understand that we want them to be safe, they like it. One of the things as an industry that we push is the concept of stop work authority. Every owner, every contractor, we all talk about stop work authority. But if you're the new rookie on site, if you're the new person and you're looking at somebody who's been doing this for 10 years or 20 years, am I going to look at that guy or gal and say, hey, you stop this lift because I think it's unsafe? That's intimidating. I mean, it really is. But that's the core, very core of safety, is the ability to identify something that's not right. And let's talk about it. So that we have to empower people and ask people and remind them, say that up front. Tell them it's okay. Call it. I'm okay. You are demanded. I implore you to stop me if we're doing something wrong, if we're not doing something safe. When you can have that conversation with your team and be very passionate about it, the other thing is, what if you got to the point where you approve these things ahead of time? Imagine going, getting ready to start your job in the morning, and you and I look at each other, okay, Jeremy, if this takes longer than 40 minutes, let's stop, step back, something might be wrong. What happens if at any point a supply doesn't show up? Let's stop, something's going wrong. If we have to leave this site to go check on something, let's stop, something might be going wrong. Think about the tripwires, think about the problems and the roadblocks that could happen, and bring them to the forefront. Now, you do that. You know my dad, Jeremy. He has said, if you work very, very hard, if you show up early, you plan what you're doing, you're going to get lucky. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what happens. I think the contractors who have good results are lucky. And for us, 10 years without a recordable at Nutrien, 12 years, 7 years at Placid, 5 years at Vertex, 16 years at Westlake. When I can say we are lacing together a decade and a half of safety and no incidents at one site or two sites or five sites, I mean, wow, when you talk about 438 job sites, 93% of them have not had a recordable injury. Think of them. 80% have not had an injury at all. That means zero is possible. And so we're trying to take people and maybe cross-pollinate. Let people see the military calls it a red team. Our industry kind of leaves it as a kind of clean eye review. Let's take people and watch what others are doing at different job sites.
Yeah, man.
I don't know if we have a secret sauce on safety. I really don't know. I think everyone does the same thing. I think it's a lot about working together, and maybe, just maybe, the core answer is communication.
Yep.
If you talk to people, establish what's going to happen up front, make it very clear, tell them it's okay. That I think does a lot to get to that point. So that communication might be the answer for me on that.
Makes sense, Davey. Well, Stevie, we got a lot to talk about, but this interview, I think we need to wrap up given our time constraints. Is there anything else you want to cover briefly before we sign off?
Hey, let me talk just 2 seconds about what's happening. The great contractors and vendors on the Gulf Coast are being asked to spread their wings and go other places.
Yeah.
It's fun to go to the mid-continent states, to go up north, and you see the same patches on Nomex that you see down here.
Mm-hmm.
I really want people, if no one hears anything else that I say, I want the people in this business to understand this is a great business that we're in. And just because you hear a lot of press coming out of the media that says, the not big, but the rest of the media that says hydrocarbons are going away, this is a bad industry. I want you to hear me. It is not a bad industry. It is not going away. The great companies that perform in this industry, the owners, contractors, suppliers, vendors, all the partners, everybody, all our competitors are going to be here for a long time. I want our employees, I want the people that work with us, people that work in this industry to know. And when you go to a party on the weekend and you meet that cousin from someplace up north that says, you're in a bad business, you need to get out of this business, you need to tell them, I haven't met a keyboard that doesn't have a plastic key on it yet.
That's right.
Computer. So this industry is safe. We're going to be here. And just like you said, Jeremy, this world is going to be an expanded energy offering with many, many more energy sources. So I think it's the most exciting time. I want everybody in this business to be very confident that it's not going away. This is an exciting time, exciting business. Stay the course.
Well, Stevie, you guys represent such a large piece of this industry. And so it's always great to talk to you and understand. I love your perspectives, not just Turner. It's kind of like where we're at as a whole. And I'm just grateful for your time. Always a blast hanging out. I'm sorry I didn't get to see you in Marco Island, but I know I'll see you soon enough. So thank you for being with us.
No, we really appreciate it. We've been with BIC since issue one, volume one, and looking forward to hundreds and hundreds more. Thank you.
Thank you, Stevie, for our partnership. And as always, we are most grateful for our audience. Please like and share this recording with colleagues. And for more industry news, videos, webinars, and podcasts, visit BICmagazine.com. Remember, everybody, it's what we do together that counts.
Thank you for listening to BIC Magazine's Inside Industry Podcast. Log on to BICmagazine.com for industry news and resources. BIC Magazine's Inside Industry Podcast is brought to you by the BIC Alliance. BIC Alliance and its sister companies, BIC Magazine, BIC Recruiting, and IVS Investment Banking, help industrial businesses grow through marketing and sales, hiring the right people, and merger and acquisition services. Visit BICalliance.com for more information.